What a day for it, actually, to have you on, because you know you've written this article recently in the, I think, the Washington Times, about Trump's part of Trump's immigration policy. This was specifically about his Muslim visa policy. But it's a big day for Donald Trump today as well, with regards to his visit to Mexico to see the Mexican president. And we know there are all sorts of Islamic terrorism issues concerning Latin America also. And then he'll be giving a speech in Arizona. Mr. Pipes, do you have a take on his visit to Mexico?
I think it's a very high-risk undertaking, because the sides begin so far apart that unless they have some groundwork in place, some kind of preliminary draft agreement on what they're going to say, it could work out to the detriment of Donald Trump.
Well, this is something that Nigel Farage, the leader of the UK Independence Party, said to me this weekend. He said the problem that Donald Trump has suffered is that he was getting into politics using a businessman strategy. That is to say, trial and error. You make mistakes, and then over the course of time, you can correct those. But it doesn't necessarily work in politics, because people always hold you to your previous positions. And this is something you said almost in your article in the Washington Times, is it not? I believe your conclusion was something about Donald Trump learning slowly and erratically from his mistakes. Do you think that has changed recently? And do you think he's got there now with his immigration policy?
Well, there clearly was a learning curve. I focus not so much on the Mexican question, but on the Muslim question. He came out with this extraordinary statement. There should be a complete shutdown and closure to Muslims entering the United States. He said that back in December, and he doubled down on it, repeated it, elaborated on it. And then starting in June, middle of June, he started walking away from it, and he started talking about extreme vetting, and then he started talking about not taking in people from certain territories, which he implied would include places like France and Germany, where there is a lot of political violence. And finally, he settled on his formulation, which is, in fact, I think, the only workable one, which is that you keep out the Islamists, you keep out the nasties, you keep out the people who want to do you harm. It took him on the order of 8 months to get there, but he did get there. And as you correctly point out, in politics, you can't always take that kind of time to change your positions. I'm delighted to see the change in position. I think it's a very important one. But one need hardly point out that having a complete ban on Muslims was a preposterous idea, just as, you know, getting the Mexicans to pay for a wall is a preposterous idea. You have to back away.
Is it simply the practicality of it and the implementation of it, or do you think there is something philosophically wrong with it as well?
Both. I think it's practically difficult. And there's a church in Berlin that's become famous as a place where Muslims convert to Christianity. What are you going to do about that? It's also immoral. We don't judge people these days anymore by their skin color, by their religion, or other such group characteristics. We look at individuals. I've actually drawn up a very long list of questions to ask to discern who is an Islamist. And it might seem awfully difficult, but if you think about it, if you give it enough attention, enough time, enough resources, you can do it. You can find out who's who. For example, we're not doing that now. For example, the San Bernardino couple had posted on Facebook many of their views, but the law enforcement community was prohibited from looking at Facebook. Is this a serious way to protect ourselves? We have to ask questions. We have to do research. We have to find out who's coming into the country.
I was in San Bernardino, and I remember the news coming out that actually they had stopped the law enforcement of this country in terms of their investigation into Tablighi Jamaat, this sort of shadowy Islamist or fundamentalist group that operates out of headquarters Dewsbury in the United Kingdom. In fact, now it's interesting, Mr. Pipes, that you're saying these things, because you're somebody who, you know, can't exactly be called soft on the Islamist question. You are well known for having worked in this area for a very long time, and the practicality of it is certainly fascinating to me and to a lot of our listeners. Is there somebody there? Is there somewhere they can find this list of questions that you've put together that would help discern an Islamist from an ordinary non-Islamist Muslim?
Yes, I published it some years ago, but now I've amplified it. But if someone goes to my website, danielpipes.org, and puts in keywords such as questions, moderate Muslims, Islamism, they'll quickly see the list. I've actually also provided a blog with lists of questions other people have come up with, including, for example, Nasser Khader, a prominent Muslim in Denmark, Robert Spencer, and others. So it's an intriguing question. I think I'm confident it can be done, but the key point, it has to be done on an individual basis. We don't judge people by how they dress, how they look, how they, you know, what religion they are. We judge people on an individual basis.
I'm just looking at these questions now. Pull it up quickly on danielpipes.org. Finding moderate Muslims, do you believe in modernity? That is the first one from November.
That's it.
Yep. And then you had another one in 2005, updated in May of this year, finding moderate Muslims more questions. And actually, you know, it's an issue close to my heart because, you know, while I wouldn't exactly call myself a practicing Muslim anymore, Daniel, I was born into a Muslim family. And you know, an outright ban on Muslims, you know, maybe that would be determined by name or heritage or whatever. Right. But effectively, that would keep me out of this country.
Certainly would. Yes.
So I think it's good that this policy is being developed. Of course, we don't want any softening on the approach to Islamists. I think you and I can both agree on that. But tell us a little bit about so our listeners get a feel for what you guys now are doing at the Middle East Forum. What can we expect to see out of you guys in the near future?
Well, we become more and more an operational outfit, as well as an intellectual one. So we're active in Congress, we're active in courtrooms, active on the campus. We're really bursting at the seams in terms of activities. Perhaps mention a couple things in Congress. One is that we are looking to change the U.S. government's approach to the Palestine refugee question, which has been in amber now for decades, for 60 plus years, and it can use a shaking up. A second one is we're looking at donations by Islamist leaders in the United States to politicians and tracking who is giving to whom. It's not a big surprise. It's not a lot of money in the larger scale of things, but it is significant and it is noteworthy to see who the Islamists see as their candidates.
Can you point to any names from the outset?
Well, it's quite striking that Hillary Clinton and Tom Kaine both have received significant amounts, and the Republican counterparts have not. In particular, Mike Pence has not, since he's been in politics a long time.
And we're seeing at the moment something I think you guys are working on. At least I read something from you very recently. I think it was on The Hill, about Saudi money for American mosques. This is becoming a feature of nearly all Western democracies at the moment, whether it's actually Saudi funding and a lot of Turkish money going into the building of mosques in Germany at the moment. And there was one mega mosque in the Netherlands, which was recently constructed, hardly given any news time about where the money was coming from and what it was being used for. Is that something you guys are chasing up on too?
Yes. Representative David Brandt has introduced legislation that would say that there needs to be reciprocity. If there isn't freedom of religion and we can't do things over there, i.e. Saudi Arabia, which has no freedom of religion, is the most repressive country in the world other than, say, North Korea, they can't do anything here. The legislation is still in its infancy, but I think it's a very important priority, because until now it's just been ad hoc, not letting the Saudis build a mosque here or there. But it needs to be legislation. It needs to be conceptualized. So this is the very first step towards what I hope would be a successful piece of legislation.
Well, I think it's very important. It's as important in your country as it is in mine and across the Europe as well. Daniel Pipes, the president of the Middle East Forum, thanks so much for joining us here on Breitbart News Daily.